Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with the Capital One Venture X Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey everyone, Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck. And sitting in for Jerry today is our great friend and co-producer, Dave C. And the C stands for cool.
Say hello, Dave.
Hi, everybody.
That's pretty, that's a really great Dave impression.
He's a troll.
Yes. I always hear him as, wah, 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 wah,
wah. Dave is great. I wish you all knew him, but we do, and so he's ours.
You're going to have to take our word for it.
That's right.
Speaking of take our word for it, Chuck, I have to say to all the people who don't know much about Mount St. Helens, prepare to have your socks knocked off.
Or your lid blown.
Or your skin seared off of your muscle?
Yeah, this is a good one. This is, this is so bread and butter stuff you should know.
It is.
I don't know why it took us almost 16 years to get to it.
And none of that margarine stuff or low fat. It's like full milk fat butter.
Oh, man.
Bread and butter stuff you should know.
Salted butter, even.
You like salted, huh?
Well, it depends on what you're using it for.
I like just plain unsalted butter, even on a bread and butter piece of, like, bread with butter.
Yeah, mainly with, like, baking and cooking. It's, like, that's when it matters.
Yeah, I gotcha. What's your brand?
Oh, boy, it depends. I love to get the, I hate to be that guy, but I do love to get the local butter when we go to our farmer's market and get it from our CSA.
What's wrong with that?
Well, I don't know. Chuck, you can't just say parquet, can you?
Right, you must be a social justice warrior. You buy local butter.
I do like that. What's the stuff, the Irish butter in the grocery store?
That's my brand. Kerrygold.
Kerrygold. That's good, too.
Like, I've researched it. Like, I've literally researched butter because I want to get the most bang for my buck. And it is at the top of basically every list.
It's good.
Of like, any butter of any kind. It's really, really good butter.
Yeah, I totally agree. I love Kerrygold. I take that stuff camping.
Yeah. I carry it around in my pocket.
Well, I like that you can get a tub. It's a smaller tub, but I do like a spreadable tub as opposed to a stick.
I haven't seen the tub.
Yeah,
we have a stick tubs. Because we have a cute little butter dish that
of
we use.
You do.
So we use the sticks. So anyway, back to Mount St. Helens. The episode today, I was 4 years old when this happened, so I mean, I didn't know what was going on, but I imagine you were like, holy cow, this is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen on my TV.
Yeah, I was nine, and I remember it being a big deal, but it's funny when I was researching this and then watching, there's a really, really great thing on YouTube that I recommend that A&E put out years ago, it had to be, it was called Minute by Minute, The Eruption of Mount St. Helens. Really gripping stuff, as A&E used to do. You know, they probably still do that kind of stuff. But
I don't know.
All of the media around it, I was thinking like, man, and I don't know if it was more regional or if it truly was nationwide, but I remember the eruption, but I didn't remember like the 6 weeks leading up to it, which was a very big deal.
Yeah. Although I think it was more of like a regional thing for the lead up. And then also if you were a geologist, a volcanologist, a seismologist, anything that had to do with volcanoes erupting or mountains, then it would have been a big deal to you too. And it definitely attracted them from far and wide. And because there was so much warning, and it was able to, and by it, I mean Mount St. Helens, was able to kind of draw to it like a magnet all of these amazingly well-trained researchers. they were there when it went off. And it's probably the most best documented volcano in history because of that.
Yeah. I mean, because like you said, Mount St. Helens is basically saying, it's coming, everyone. Would you like to document this?
Yeah.
I'm telling you again, it's coming.
Yep.
And I'll show you in lots of different scary ways that it's coming. And people left, people stayed, people came there.
People laughed, people cried.
Like tourists came to see this thing. So
for sure.
Let's get into it.
Okay. So just a real quick refresher. We've done volcanoes, and I think we've done super volcanoes too, because that sounds like us.
Yeah. 2010 was volcanoes. 2017 was super volcanoes.
Okay. So we talked a lot about how volcanoes work in those episodes. So if you want to know a lot more in depth, go check those out. But just as a refresher for the specific kind of volcano that Mount St. Helens is, it's a stratovolcano, and it's created when one younger plate is subducted under an older plate. And as the younger plate goes down into the bowels of the earth, all of the rock it carries with it gets heated up. Same with water, too. And that stuff travels upward because it's less dense than the surrounding mantle down below. And as it gets closer and closer to the crust, it wants to pop out of there.
Yeah.
But it can't necessarily. Sometimes it can. And when it can, it just spews out all sorts of molten lava, and that builds the volcano in a kind of a cone shape, which is what Mount St. Helens was up until May 18th, 1980.
Yeah. It's a part of the Cascade Arc. Arranged there in the Pacific Northwest. And all of this happened in, you know, geologically speaking, pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It happened over the course of about 40,000 years in the case of Mount St. Helens, which is pretty speedy. And Ed helped us out with this. We did a great job on this article. And Ed points out that, you know, in the Pacific Northwest, that's why you see so many, you know, sort of coney mountains like that, is because of this Cascade Arc. And how these mountains were formed, you know, not too long ago.
Right. Yeah, 40,000 years ago, maybe less.
40,000 for St. Helens, and I think the whole arc is less than 100.
Right. So the whole thing that's driving Mount St. Helens, and apparently also there's some other, I guess, volcanic mountains in the area, like Adams. I think Mount Adams is one as well.
Yeah.
There's a magma chamber somewhere under there, I think possibly miles and miles below the surface. But under normal circumstances, like I said, when a stratovolcano is formed, the lava just kind of is able to find cracks in the crust, and like it's released through there, and it builds the mountain up slowly and slowly. But if there's not a crack in the crust, as in the case where Mount St. Helens is, that magma starts to back up. It hits the crust, and it starts to back up below. And all of a sudden, you have a lot of stuff going on that makes things go kaboom when the right set of circumstances happens.
Yeah, this is pretty notable. This magma chamber is and was quite large. And like you said, it's looking for a place to go. But if it doesn't have a place to go, what'll happen? And as you'll see, this is what happened in the case of Mount St. Helens, is it starts bulging, and like the mountain. If you're a geologist, it's super exciting to see this happen, even though it's very scary and dangerous. But when a geologist sees an actual mountain start to bulge out in a direction, and we're talking, you know, hundreds of feet of bulge over the course of a pretty short period of time, then it's a pretty notable thing. And that's exactly what was happening in the case of the magma chamber there in Washington.
Yeah, like this pressure is building up so much, it's causing a boil on the mountain.
Yeah.
The mountain grows a goiter, basically, and that's just full of pressure and magma just waiting to go off. It doesn't always go off. And in fact, Mount St. Helens had two bulges, also called cryptodomes, which is pretty awesome, from previous volcanic eruptions. One was called Goat Rocks Bulge, and then the other one was called the Sugar Bowl Bulge. And they just never, like, the magma found its way out other ways, but the bulge was left. This is a new bulge, and like you said, it was growing, I think, about 6 feet a day. Every day, it kept growing another 6 feet, which is really fast for a mountain to grow. And that was one of the big signs initially that something was going on. And one more thing before we start to get into Mount St. Helens itself, Chuck, I think we need to say, like, Mount St. Helens was big It was a big eruption, but it was not the biggest eruption Mount St. Helens has ever had. And apparently the biggest eruption it's ever had came just about 4,000 years ago, which is within traditional, like, folktale memory.
Yeah, I mean, it had been an active volcano for 40,000 years, but the big one before 1980 was, like you said, I was trying to look at a specific year, but let's just say 4,000 years ago.
Yeah.
Because once you get back that far, you know.
Who cares?
But it became, like you said, part of folklore. The indigenous people there, especially the Puyallup people, called the mountain Lewit, L-O-O-W-I-T. Mm-hmm. And there was a Lewit Brewing Company. So I wanted to shout them out. This is one of those things where I thought, I wonder why, because there's been such a push to change names of things over the past, like, decade or so. This is one that was, it seems so, like, sort of egregious that we should call it Lewit and not Mount St. Helens.
Right.
That I'm pretty curious. I'm sure there's been pushes over the years to get it changed, but the Europeans, of course, named it Mount St. Helens in 1792 after Captain George Vancouver, if that name rings a bell, it should, gave the name of it because of a diplomat named Alan Fitzherbert. Didn't call it Fitzherbert Peak or anything like that.
Okay.
Because his noble title was Baron St. Helens.
Thank God.
But here's the rub is that Alan Fitzherbert never even saw Mount St. Helens, the mountain named after him. So, like, I don't know. Maybe let's call this one Lewit.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea, actually. And the reason they call it Lewit, that was, she was named after a famous volcanic fire tender woman, and Lewit and a couple of other men who fell in love with her and fought for her, became Mount St. Helens, or Lewit, if you want to call it that. And then the other men who were fighting for her became Mount Hood and Mount Adams. They were smited by the creator god and turned into mountains for fighting. And there's legends, not just from the Puyallup, but other indigenous tribes around the area, that something really big happened, and it looks like what it is a geomyth, which we've talked about before, and I think the Great Floods episode, that has been handed down generation after generation, that describes this enormous eruption 4,000 years ago.
Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And it was a big eruption, too. There's just one other thing. There is a layer of tephra, of basically volcanic ash and debris and stuff, that is so thick and so wide, it goes up into British Columbia. And 62 miles away from Mount St. Helen, it's still 20 inches thick, almost 2 feet thick of ash, 62 miles away. That's how big that 4,000-year-ago eruption was.
That's huge. And all this to say that Mount St. Helens, which has an S, by the way. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did.
You keep saying Helen. I just wondered.
I'm being short because I don't want to take up too much time talking about certain things.
Oh, that's good. That reminds me of the guy in college who fell on the sidewalk and his books splayed out, and then he acted like he was reading.
Yeah, I love that story. I forgot about him.
All this to say is that Mount St. Helens had been, you know, had a long history of activity. So it's not like anyone ever thought, well, that thing is done and it's never going to happen again.
No, definitely not. Because also in the 19th century, there was a lot of eruptions, too. There's a painting by a Canadian artist named Paul Kane, who painted an 1847 eruption. So, I mean, starting in the 19th century, Mount St. Helens was documented pretty clearly, scientifically, too, as being an eruptive volcano, a disruptive volcano, you can almost say.
All right, shall we take a break?
Yeah.
That's a nice prelude.
I think so, too.
All right. We'll be back right after this. Learning stuff with Joshua and Charles. Stuff
you should know. Dad deserves something really nice for Father's Day. But let's face it, we usually don't do it. Big gifts are for Mother's Day.
Picking something up on the way is for Father's Day. Well, let's make Father's Day something this year with the Bartesian Cocktail Maker. It whips up over 60 premium cocktails on demand, each ready at the push of a button. And right now, you get $50 off the Bartesian Cocktail Maker when you buy one pack of Dad's favorite cocktail capsules. Dad will publicly love that you saved $50 on the countertop machine that crafts premium cocktails on demand. And he'll secretly love that you splurged on him for Father's Day with the gift of a Bartesian. Because the only thing that lets Dad know he's the world's number one dad better than a world's number one dad coffee mug is an artisan cocktail in his hand. Make Dad's Father's Day and Father's Day cocktails with all natural juices and bitters without making any mess at all. Visit bartesian.com/father to get $50 off the best premium cocktail maker for Dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible.
That's right. It's even in the name. Use code STUFF20 at checkout to receive $20 off your first month. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month every month, taxes and fees included.
Yep. Again, use promo code STUFF20 and you'll receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Switch now at Visible.com.
For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Hey everybody, it's time to talk about Squarespace. Squarespace has absolutely everything you could possibly need to build whatever website you're trying to. You can host video content and organize your entire video library, plus showcase it on beautiful video pages. You can use analytics to grow your business and learn where your site visits and sales are coming from. What else, Chuck?
Well, buddy, if you got merch, then you can sell it on Squarespace. You can easily sell custom merch and create a passive income stream that engages your audience and scales your brand. Design your products and production, inventory, and shipping are all handled for you, saving you time and money.
Yeah, and if your business is appointment-based, you can accept appointments on your Squarespace website. You can offer online or in-person private sessions, workshops, and group classes. And Squarespace provides everything you need to manage your schedule, accept secure payments, and send automatic reminders, all in a beautifully showcased site.
So just go to squarespace.com/stuff and you're going to get a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Okay, so we got a nice background on Mount St. Helens. It had been very active for about, or on and off active for 40,000 years, including, I believe, the last sort of big one was in 1857. Not too long after that, in 1908, about 1 million acres of land became part of Columbia National Forest, which was hence renamed Gifford Pinchot or Pinchot. I never know how to say that.
The Bronson Pinchot National Forest.
National Forest, and that was in 1949, and Mount St. Helens is inside that National Forest. All this is sort of a long way of saying it wasn't, like, super populated. It didn't have, wasn't surrounded by neighborhoods and suburbs and stuff like that.
Right.
But there was something, or there is still something, called Spirit Lake there, near the base of the mountain, which is, they have, like, youth camps there. People had cabins here and there. There were recreational activities that all over the place. So it's not like no one was there, but it wasn't heavily populated.
Right. Well put. So the whole thing starts actually even before the whole thing started. And I saw in 1975 that two volcanologists published a paper saying that it was very likely Mount St. Helens was going to erupt in the 20th century at some point, like a big one.
Yeah.
And 5 years later, on March 20th, 1980, the whole thing was kicked off by a 4.0 earthquake, which is nothing to sneeze at. And it was at the mountain, like this earthquake took place at the mountain. And all of a sudden, within 5 days, there were quake storms. There was 24 quakes of 4.0 or greater within 8 hours.
Oh, man.
When a volcano starts doing that and you're detecting it, that's when the geologists come running from far and wide.
Yeah. So they, you know, the word gets out and they did come running from far and wide and they, you know, set up camp there at various places. Other just sort of, as I learned from watching this A&E special, that there are like volcano chasers even that they hear about this stuff. They're fascinated by it. I guess just sort of amateur geo enthusiasts. And people started kind of coming in there because they got wind that something may be brewing at Mount St. Helens, including, and this is, you know, there are all kinds of people we could feature story-wise, but one gentleman we are going to feature, his name was David Johnston, and he was a volcanologist at the USGS, the United States Geological Survey, and he was one of the, there were some great interviews with him in this A&E special. He's a very young guy, super excited to be there, and he was one of the ones kind of sounding the alarm along with his partner, this guy named Don Swanson, about, hey, like, you know, the S is getting real here, everybody. And it looks like thing like people need to start leaving.
Yeah. Like the thing is there, the people who did live on the mountain were not the kind of folk who listened to, like, you know,
the government,
pencil neck college boys
or
the government to be told, like, leave your home. And then also there was those youth groups that were like, you're going to ruin our week at Spirit Lake.
Yeah.
There was also Weyerhauser.
They're hoping to get to first base.
Exactly. It's like a roller rink over there.
Yeah.
And then there was Weyerhauser, who had a contract to be able to log on the mountain. They definitely didn't want to have to shut down operations. So there's a lot of pressure. So a surprising amount of pressure, you know, more than you would think, to keep the mountain open. And David Johnston and Don Swanson and some of the other colleagues were like, you really can't do this. And they managed to convince the governor of Washington that it was the right move. And then later on, as we'll see, there was even more pressure to reopen because things didn't go as fast as everyone thought. And they managed to push that back as well. And as a result, David Johnston is frequently credited for saving thousands of lives potentially, which is pretty cool. I mean, and everything I've seen about him, he was a genuinely great person and also like a really great pioneer in volcanology too.
Yeah, absolutely. They did eventually set up what they called a red zone. And a lot of people did evacuate. There were some notable people who didn't. Certainly, we need to mention Harry Truman. Obviously not the president, but he was this old codger who ran the lodge there, and he became a folk hero because he famously thumbed his nose and stayed and said, you know, I'm a part of this place. It's a part of me. If the mountain goes, I'm going to go with it. Art Carney played him in the movie version. He got a lot of media attention, along with his 16 cats, which is the only part of the story, like, hey man, I'm all for people evacuating to keep people safe, but I'm also like, if some old mountain man wants to stay up there and go down with the volcano, like,
yeah,
that's his right, but send the cats away. Don't say like, I'm going to go down and kill these 16 cats at the same time.
Yeah, it's kind of like being buried in, like, you know, medieval times and having your live horse buried with you.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Once I heard about the cats, because I was all into this guy.
Right.
And then I heard about the cats. I was like, oh, dude, you should have at least sent the cats away.
Yeah. No way. Not a lodge codger. So Harry Truman will come back in. This is Harry R. Truman, by the way. Everybody said his middle initial to differentiate him.
Right.
He'll come back in later. But so the last thing that happened on the mountain, March 25th, in 8 hours, there's 24 4.0 or greater magnitude earthquakes, and that brought everybody running. This whole thing was so perfectly planned that on the day of the eruption, there was the mineral and gem show in Yakima, like, I think, less than 100 miles away from Mount St. Helens. So anybody who had anything to do with geology just happened to be in the area or was purposefully in the area.
Yeah.
And then on March 27th, it's just getting more and more and more. There was an actual eruption, right?
Yeah. So this was, compared to what eventually ended up happening, you could call this a sort of mini eruption, even though it made a big boom. Apparently it was a pretty cloudy day, so it wasn't super visible, but the ash column went up 6,500 feet into the air.
That's nothing to sneeze at.
And a new crater formed at the summit, which grew to about 1,600 feet wide. Mm-hmm. So it was a major thing. There was another one on the 28th, again throwing ash into the air. And this is like basically from that point through the big one in mid-May, it was just constant warning, constant upheaval, mudslides, mm-hmm. avalanches, craters growing. And like the mountain is saying, like, it's going to happen, people. This is not a false alarm.
Right.
Until things calm down. And that's what you were talking about earlier. Like, things kind of settle down on, what was that, like?
Around the 15th,
yeah, around basically. The 15th of May, to where the people got antsy that were evacuated and said, hey, listen, we want to go back and check on our stuff.
Yeah.
And the governor eventually was like, all right, I think it, you know, at the time, and I think Washington still is a little bit of one of those, like, not quite live free or die, but, you know, like, all right, listen, these people pay taxes. They want to go back to their homes. Sign a waiver that you're not going to sue us and let them go back there. And that's what they did.
There's footage of them signing waivers on the hood of a car with some obvious state lawyer in a three-piece suit, like handing people a pen and being like, sign here. It's really hilarious. But they did. Some people started to trickle in. And that's actually why there were, you know, I think, and we ended up with 57 casualties, 57 people died. And that was one reason why it was actually that high. Could have been less, but people were allowed to trickle back in. They still kept like a perimeter, but I think it was kind of porous. If you wanted to get through, you could get through. And there are stories in that minute-by-minute episode of people. There's this one backpacker who is probably hilarious at parties because he makes like a funny voice for the police when the police is talking, when he's recreating a conversation he had.
It was funny.
He snuck through with friends. There are a lot of people on the mountain that otherwise might not have been had they kept it closed. But they did open it up a little bit. And it was because nothing had happened for a little while. And then about 3 days later, everything happened. You said S was getting real. This is when the S hit the fan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just prior to this, I guess let's back up one half second and let you know about what happened with David Johnson and Don Swanson. They had moved from their initial base at Coldwater One, which was about, I think, 8 or 9 miles away, to their second station, which was called Coldwater Two, which is about 5 to 6 miles from the mountain. And notably, it was on the northeast side of the mountain, which turned out to be the wrong spot to be. But, you know, these guys knew what was going on. They know it's a dangerous job. And apparently they were swapping, taking shifts. And Don Swanson got the call from Johnston, and he said, hey, listen, I've got tonight and tomorrow if you come and relieve me the next day. And then on May 18th, 1980 is when Johnston was there when everything went boom.
Yeah, and I think there have been other colleagues and grad students and everything around Coldwater, too. And Johnston sent him away. He's like, this is outside the red zone. It's still potentially dangerous. There's no reason for more than just one of us to be here at a time, so you guys go. So at 8:32 a.m. on May 18th, 1980, Mount St. Helens, like, blew up. And there's, like, a typical idea that people have of a volcano going off, and most of the time, it's shooting like a huge thing of ash and magma straight into the air from its top.
Yeah.
But that is not what happened with Mount St. Helens. Mount St. Helens was a very specific and unusual type of eruption because it didn't go out of the top. It came out of the side, and it came out in what was known as a lateral blast eruption.
Yeah, so, you know, like we said earlier, that pressure is building up a lot under the surface. There's a lot of moisture down there. Some of it was, like you mentioned, from that initial plate subduction. That's called magmatic water. Some of it is just regular old groundwater from rain and snow and everything because it is the mountains. That's called meteoric water. And all of that stuff is just heating up. It's got pressure from below because it's heating. It's got pressure from above because all of that weight of the rock is just pushing it down.
Yeah.
And all of this magma is just like boiling under there. But, and I know we talked about this before. I guess it was in one of the volcano episodes, but it's not allowed to turn to steam because there's no room for it. Like, steam is expansive and it can't expand. So it's just this superheated, beyond the boiling point level of liquid that's just distributed all throughout the upper half and notably sort of the north side of this mountain.
Yeah, and that created that bulge that kept growing by about 6 feet a day. It is, because like it's as violent as you can imagine that a bulge and something that could make a bulge on the side of a mountain would be.
Yeah.
And so under other circumstances, a Plinian eruption where a volcano explodes out of the top, like you typically think of, that pressure, that magma is going to basically force the top of the mountain open, and that's how it's going to explode. This is not what happened with Mount St. Helens. That kind of, I guess the hump was on one side. It was on the north flank, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So it was on the north flank, and the thing that kicked off Mount St. Helens eruption wasn't the volcano. It was actually an earthquake in the volcano, and that earthquake caused the largest landslide in recorded history on Earth. More than half of a square mile of Mount St. Helens suddenly vanished away. It just suddenly dropped off the north side of the mountain.
Yeah, and it's like, you should really go check out the footage of this stuff. It's some of the most amazing, like, natural geologic disaster footage I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Just to see this mountain, and then especially in the A&E thing, to see people interviewed describing like seeing this with their eyeballs. It was just like, it was incomprehensible what they were witnessing, like a mountain that large and part of it just going away immediately.
Yeah, and one of the reasons they were able to witness it, and we have such great documentation, is because at 8:32 a.m., a pair of geologists, husband and wife geologists, happened to be flying in a plane.
Yeah.
Because they'd hired a plane to go look at Mount St. Helens because they'd heard that, you know, there's some stuff going on. And they happened to make one more pass right as that earthquake dropped the side of the mountain. They were, like, right above it in a plane, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, where's her quote? Should we read that?
Yeah.
This is Dorothy Stoeffel in 2019. She said, "The whole north half of the mountain that we were flying just 500 feet above began churning, and a mile-long fracture shot across the mountain. Faster than our minds could absorb, the north half of the mountain just became like fluid and slid away."
Amazing. I saw somebody else describe it as like a zipper opening along the mountain.
Yeah, and you know, there were amateur photographers around for some of this stuff. Some of these hikers, like that guy you mentioned that was telling the story in funny voices. Yeah. And volcano chasers, like, they got one guy got like 22 pictures in a row, and this is when mm-hmm. it eventually blew. The other guy got like 6 or 8 pictures. Mm-hmm. There was a family camping with their two young daughters.
Oh, man.
And that guy, they were, you know, on the north side, you know, well below it, but, you know, within the range. And he was like, you know, speaking to how it didn't blow from the top, he said, "It looked like somebody shot a shotgun out of the side of this mountain pointed at us." So ash was raining down, but it was raining like at people and less down from the sky.
Right, exactly. It wasn't going up and then coming back down. It was coming straight at you if you were anywhere north of the mountain.
Yeah.
And the reason why the north of the mountain was so dangerous is because that's where that hump had been. That's also where the earthquake moved a good portion of the mountain, which meant that all that pressure that was keeping that pressurized, superheated water from boiling under the mountain was suddenly exposed. It was, that pressure was gone. And so all of that incredibly hot water flash heated into steam. And when that happens, that expands. Like you said, one of the reasons steam can't exist in that situation is because it's too expansive. Mm-hmm. When it does have the chance to expand, it does so with incredible force.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. That's why Mount St. Helens blew out the side rather than the top, because there had been a weakening in the pressure that allowed all that to just blow out. And blow out it did.
Yeah. I mean, it was, if you look at it, it looks almost like a controlled demolition blast or something.
Yeah.
It definitely doesn't look like any kind of volcano blast that you might think of in your head. Mm-hmm. It happened kind of all at once. And it was a 24 megaton blast, which I know everyone always tries to compare it to, like Hiroshima. It was 1,600 times as powerful as the Hiroshima atomic bomb.
Good Lord. But I mean, that's what it would take to move 0.6 square or cubic miles of mountain all of a sudden, too, you know?
Yeah.
And that blast, Chuck, that 24 megaton blast, it was described as like a fast-moving cloud of heat and stones, moving at some points pretty close to the mountain, 300 miles an hour.
Oh, man.
Heated to like 660 degrees Fahrenheit. I think that's like 380 degrees Celsius. Just blowing northward away from the mountain. And everything within 8 miles of that, of the mountain, was in that blast zone. And if you'll recall correctly, David Johnston's Coldwater 2 camp was within about 5 miles.
Yeah, he obviously didn't make it. They found pieces of his trailer like a decade later.
Mm-hmm.
He had time to send out one signal, which was over his radio, Vancouver, Vancouver, this is it. The only person to pick that up was a ham radio operator nearby. And they renamed that area Johnston Ridge in his honor. Obviously, Harry Truman perished along with those 16 cats.
Mm-hmm.
And he was close enough to where I saw that they said that he and everything around him was basically instantly vaporized. Like, he wouldn't have felt anything. It would have happened. His death and vaporization would have happened in like less than a second.
Yeah, I have the impression the same thing happened to David Johnston, and also that ham radio operator who was volunteering to kind of document it. He documented David Johnston getting covered up. He said, gentlemen, the camper in the car that's sitting over to the south of me, he was talking about David Johnston, is covered, is going to hit me too. And that was Jerry Martin, that ham radio operator, and that was his last transmission.
Man.
He was vaporized as well, essentially. Everything north of the mountain within 8 miles was just destroyed, Like entire 100-foot trees that were like 10, 12 feet in diameter, just completely flattened and also denuded of any bark on the way as well. And this was just the blast. That the landslide that was created from the earthquake that initially triggered the eruption, that had some incredible effects as well.
Yeah, because what you've got, you know, beyond this avalanche happening is you've got all of a sudden all this heat happens in a place where there's a lot of snow. So that snow melts, all that glacier ice melts, and you have flooding, and you have mudslides, and you have a word that I had never even heard of before Ed included it in here, which was lahar, which sounds like just a mudslide on steroids.
Yeah.
Like a mudslide carrying ammunition with it.
Right.
And this is just raining down everywhere and like causing a path of destruction that hasn't been seen in like modern times in this country.
Yeah, it was like it had so much power, Chuck, that slide did, that one part of it was carrying chunks of rock as big as 558 feet or 170 meters across.
Wow.
That's as big as a 50-story building. It was moving rocks that size.
Holy cow.
Fast as you can imagine down the mountain into the valleys. And I saw it described as if you were watching it from a ridge, as some people were, like far away, you would see the cloud or the debris starting to come at you. It would disappear into a valley, and then all of a sudden it would come up over the ridge and,
wow,
and keep going. It was just filling valleys with rocks and debris. It's unimaginable trying to grasp what happened. And it's even crazier that some people are actually there watching this happen.
Crazy.
It is crazy. You want to take a break?
Yeah, we'll take a break and talk a little bit more about the after effects right after this.
Learning stuff with Joshua and Charles. Stuff you should
know. Dad deserves something really nice for Father's Day, but let's face it, we usually don't do it. Big gifts are for Mother's Day. Picking something up on the way is for Father's Day. Well, let's make Father's Day something this year with the Bartesian Cocktail Maker. It whips up over 60 premium cocktails on demand, each ready at the push of a button. And right now, you get $50 off the Bartesian Cocktail Maker when you buy one pack of Dad's favorite cocktail capsules. Dad will publicly love that you saved $50 on the countertop machine that crafts premium cocktails on demand. And he'll secretly love that you splurged on him for Father's Day with the gift of a Bartesian. Because the only thing that lets Dad know he's the world's number one dad better than a world's number one dad coffee mug is an artisan cocktail in his hand. Make Dad's Father's Day and Father's Day cocktails with all natural juices and bitters without making any mess at all. Visit bartesian.com/father to get $50 off the best premium cocktail maker for Dad at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible.
That's right. It's even in the name. Use code STUFF20 at checkout to receive $20 off your first month. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month every month, taxes and fees included.
Yep. Again, use promo code STUFF20 and you'll receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Switch now at Visible.com.
For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Okay, and we're back, and as Chuck promised everyone, it's After Effect time.
Well, we talked a little bit about it. Obviously, Spirit Lake, which we mentioned at the beginning, which was at the base of the mountain, has a very strange effects on bodies of water. It did two things. It made the lake larger, but it also mm-hmm. made it shallower because mm-hmm. it just flooded all this water down there and raised it such that the outlet was basically dammed up. And so the lake got a whole lot bigger, but it reduced its depth by about 80 feet. I think 5 years later, they built a spillway tunnel to control the depth of the lake. 200 homes and cabins and about 200 miles of road and railways were completely obliterated.
Yeah. I also saw that lake was now 200 feet higher in elevation than it had been before, as if like there was so much debris. It like raised the lake 200 feet. Even though it also made it shallower. It's nuts.
And I think it lowered the ultimate height of Mount St. Helens, right?
Yeah. I can't remember. I think by like 600 meters or something like that, some ridiculous amount of height just blown off. And that was another thing, too, like the after effects of it. If you look at Mount St. Helens today, or especially like right afterward, it turned into like an amphitheater.
Yeah.
Like the north side was blown out and the other sides were kind of curved around. And what was neat is one of the huge after effects of Mount St. Helens, one of the more positive ones, is I saw it described as like a crash course for volcanologists mm-hmm. and seismologists and everybody who are now just had this amazing natural laboratory to study in, and that the eruption, because it was a lateral blast, opened up like basically a cross section of the mountain that they could study now its past history from the inside out, which I thought was pretty neat.
And a young Trey Anastasio said, "One day I shall play at the base of that amphitheater."
Oh, did he?
And bore people with noodling on my guitar.
Did he? They played there?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's anything there. I was just kidding.
Oh, wow. That was just completely made up.
Oh, yeah. I never will miss a chance to take a dig at fish.
I'm with you.
So ash is raining down and out. Mm-hmm. It literally darkened the skies. When this ash, if you were close enough to it, it would literally burn you alive.
Yeah.
If you're far away, it can just create a lot of problems. Everything from, you know, just equipment not working, electrical outages and blackouts and brownouts. Visibility is obviously terrible. As far as crops go, certain crops were wiped out by this ash and the toxic gases. Some of them did a little bit better because they just got a little bit of the ash, and it ash will help promote rainfall and hold moisture in the ground better. So apparently wheat crops and apple crops fared pretty well.
Yeah, that was surprising.
Yeah.
I also saw there was a lot of devastation. Any big game animal in the blast zone was, I said big game animal, by the way, was in the blast zone, was killed without question. But they were very surprised. Biologists who went in to investigate shortly afterward found there were like entire communities and ecosystems of smaller animals and plants, microbes, fungi that had survived just fine and were among the first to recolonize and were part of the reason why Mount St. Helens ecosystem started to rebound so quickly.
I mean, that's what'll happen, right? If the earth ever just burns up into a fiery ball, that'll just become a big mushroom field, right?
Probably. And then the animals that lived underground will come above ground and say, it's our time, baby.
I look forward to that day for some reason.
What else happened? Oh, I saw that the ash cloud that blew finally out of the top. We should say the lateral blast was followed by a Plinian blast. And that shot, like, you know, that was the money volcano shot that everybody was looking for. A plume of ash and smoke rose 80,000 feet into the air. And it was moving so fast that it circled the globe in 15 days. Came back to square one in 15 days. And of course, that was like affecting air traffic. Do you remember that Icelandic volcano that affected air traffic in Europe for like weeks?
Yeah.
Weren't you stranded by that or something?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay. It like they knew what to do in part because of how Mount St. Helens affected air travel. At the time, they were like, this is brand new to us, but it helped lay the groundwork for understanding what to look for, how to deal with that kind of stuff later on.
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to point out, too, about Spirit Lake was if you look at footage of the lake and now these kind of rivers that were just happening, and it literally, like, rerouted, you know, the Columbia River and the Cowlitz River in sections. But it looks like a logging operation is happening.
Yeah.
And like you could almost and may have been able, well, obviously it would have been too dangerous, but it looks like you could have walked over these logs. They were so like packed, and these were just trees, you know, an hour before.
Yeah. If you could do that lumberjack log rolling thing,
yeah,
you could have probably made it across the lake.
Probably could have.
But there in that minute by minute episode, there was a pair of like high school sweethearts who'd been camping.
Yeah.
And they had a harrowing experience because they both got thrown into Spirit Lake, and the boyfriend was able to rescue the girlfriend as like the logs were starting to close in on them. He pulled her out from the lake, and they were hanging on to logs when they finally made it out and were rescued. That happened. Like, that happened to somebody.
Yeah, they were in their car.
Oh, is that how, that's how they got in the lake? They were in their car?
Yeah, they said it just picked them up, and all they were driving, and then they were floating. And they said that they're, you know, they're, she said, like, my instinct was to get out of the car, but there was, like, nowhere to go.
Right, yeah, because there were trees everywhere floating around beside them, right?
Yeah, and this is, you know, these are just sort of, that's what was so cool about the special, is it really brought in the human element of these people that were around there.
Right.
And they, you know, they all survived because they were being interviewed, obviously. Dorothy Stoffel, who was the geologist that was flying with, I guess it was her husband, Keith, or was that her brother?
Her husband, Keith.
Oh, okay. They survived that plane flight. Like, they got out of there. There were stories of people that literally, it was like from a movie, drove, you know, 110 miles an hour, like outrunning this ash debris slide coming at them.
Right. Yeah. And some people didn't make it. So there was one guy who was chronicled in that was driving as fast as he can in the the blast just caught up with him and buried him in the ash. And he probably died pretty much instantly. Oh, but like, again, that happened to people. There's very famous footage of a house just flowing down like a newly engorged mudslidey river.
Yeah.
Moving so fast that you probably could have towed water skiers from the house, essentially. It was moving that fast just down the river. So, I mean, again, it was one of the most documented volcanic eruptions of all time. So there's really amazing footage on there, or just on the internet is what I mean. But that wasn't the last time that Mount St. Helens has erupted. I think it erupted a few times between 1980 and maybe 1996, I think.
Yeah.
And then the biggest one recently was between 2004 and 2008.
Yeah, it started sort of getting a little more active again. This time, though, you know, one of the things that to the benefit of the surrounding area when a volcano blows like that is that pressure is released. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take a long time to build back up to that level again, kind of depending on how it reforms on top of it. But this time, apparently, there are more ways for this pressure to be released. So I think it's just sort of the pressure's being released a little more gradually since 2004.
That's my impression, too.
But they do say that, like, oh, no, like, it will happen again. Like, things are, there is a new lava dome growing, and the pressure is going to build up, and it could be in 1,000 years or it could be in 10 years.
Yeah, we just don't know.
No, but they are studying it. Like, there's a lot of active research and study going on at Mount St. Helens now.
Yeah, I believe, you know, the eruption was such a big deal that they've opened, the USGS opened a research station nearby. And also that 2004 activity basically ran from 2004 to 2008. Like you said, they've been studying the mountain closely. So there's amazing time-lapse footage of those 4 years. Mm-hmm. And it's astounding how fast and how big Mount St. Helens just grows from that eruption activity. It's called time-lapse images of Mount St. Helens dome growth. It's on YouTube. And I recommend checking that out as well.
Yeah, I would just be careful when you Google dome growth.
Right. Or bulge growth.
Oh, boy.
So, man, we are so juvenile sometimes, aren't we?
Sure.
And by we, I mean me.
No, me too.
But like we said, Mount St. Helens bounced back, Spirit Lake opened back up, and the Coldwater 2 station has been renamed after David Johnston. And there's an amazing memorial, too. I saw on some TripAdvisor post that somebody said it was like one of the best, like, not welcome center, but, you know, information centers that the person's ever been to. So
yeah,
I would like to go there someday.
The cookies are unreal.
Right. You got anything else?
I got nothing else.
All right. Well, go forth and research Mount St. Helens with an S. And you can start doing that by watching Dante's Peak. Since I said Dante's Peak, it's time for listener mail.
This is following up on an email that you particularly liked from our Spooktacular.
Okay.
Hey, guys. Thoroughly enjoying the most recent Spooktacular. The accents are comedy genius. Nice. Meagle, do you want to pop in and say hi?
Hello.
Perfect. I'm going to bring Meagle back every now and then, by the way. Just want to prepare you and the audience.
Okay.
I wanted to address a couple of 1800s diction issues that caused some puzzlement. When you guys talked about toilet, it's basically what Josh said. I've always thought of it as freshening up in the bathroom, washing your face and hands when first waking up or going to bed. I double-check with Merriam-Webster, though, and it's more generally dressing and grooming.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, sure. On the other hand, the strangers in the beverage from the toll house is a lot more puzzling.
Yeah, it is.
I had no idea what it meant, and although Josh's guess that beverage meant the pub was clever, it doesn't really make sense. Just as a reminder, the sentence is talking about some men drinking tea in an inn and pausing to, quote, discover the sex and dates of arrival of the strangers, which floated in some numbers in the beverage, end quote. I think I found the answer, though, guys, in a dictionary of Scottish dialect. We love this stuff, by the way.
Yeah, this is amazing.
Tea leaves floating on the surface of your drink are considered omens that you will meet someone new. So these tea leaves are called strangers. Mm-hmm. If you pick up a stranger and bite it, the toughness will tell you whether the new acquaintance will be male or female.
Amazing.
Amazing. I'm going to guess there's also a way to predict the date you meet this person, although I didn't see reference to that. So that's what the characters are doing, guys, using tea leaves to predict the future. By the way, other omens can also be strangers, like unburned candle wicks or soot on grates. I've loved the show for years. Look forward to many more. That is a great email, Nat Jacobs. Fantastic sleuthing.
Yep.
And we are super grateful.
Top to bottom, start to finish, wonderful email. Also, just put so nicely, too. Not like you big dummies.
Yeah.
Because I got it pretty wrong. It was a terrible guess.
I didn't think it was a bad guess.
But, I mean, that was really hard. Like, you, that was obscure, you know? Yeah.
Very much.
Anyway, I love knowing that now. That was one of my favorite emails. So thanks a lot, Nat. And if you want to be like Nat and get in touch with us in the best way possible, you can send us an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/powersafely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.